Hello and welcome to QBD Book Club, the podcast. I'm Victoria Carthew and it is terrific to have your company for another year of cracking reads. And I'm today going to go out a little bit of a limb and suggest that Jo Dixon, my special guest, is a homebody because, well, she wrote a first book called The House of Now and Then, and the new one is Shadow at the Door with the house as a central character. Let's have a listen. Jo Dixon joins me. Hello, am I right? Are you a bit of a homebody, Jo?
Good morning, Victoria. I would say you're absolutely correct. I find houses fascinating. They're a reflection of the people that live within them. They can be both a constraint, also a place of happiness or misery. I mean, they're buildings, but they encompass so much. So I'm fascinated by the structures that we live in and how they affect us, I guess, and the impact they have on people.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll get into it more as we talk more about A Shadow at the Door, but it is, your house is a central character and you give us all of those things, be it the rooms, be it the connections that we have. So the stories are not just about people, but the places where it happens as well.
Very much so. My first book, The House of Now and Then, oddly enough, has a house in it. A spectacular a mid-century house in remote Tasmania. So I guess basically wrote my dream house and then put dastly deeds around it and mystery and twisty bits. But that was one of the central focuses of it. This one, A Shadow at the Door, is in Hobart. And it was partly inspired because I had an amazing project where I actually renovated an 1850s sandstone cottage in Hobart. And it was a massive job, pulling out all the horsehair insulation and you know, it was incredible. We took it from a dank squat pretty much to a gorgeous little cottage, and that inspired me somewhat for this book, because in this story Remy, the main character, has renovated, oddly enough, a sandstone building in Hobart, and it's her pride and joy. And I remember that feeling when you've put your heart and soul into bringing something to life. It's more than a house. It's your pride, it's your home, it's your security as well, quite often.
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? Because the move to Tassie from Brizzy has obviously been great for the creative juices. And we know that in recent years, plenty of really terrific Australian authors, from Jane Harper to Kyle Perry, Di Morrissey, you know, great authors have written some wonderful kind of atmospheric books set in Tasmania. It's really worked for you, hasn't it?
I've been down here 12 years now. I've lived multitude of places around the world and around Australia, and I have never felt more at home or settled than I am down here. It is beautiful. It can be intimidating. It certainly lends itself to twisty mysteries, suspense, which is where I sit. And I've got to say, the beautiful thing about Tasmania is that Tasmanian readers absolutely adore the homegrown stories. They just love reading about places that are familiar to them, other than, instead of, say, the outback or Sydney or something from the mainland. So I've got a solid support base, I guess.
That actually makes a lot of sense, because it is absolutely spectacular, but they probably were overlooked in a literary sense for a long time. And it makes sense that they love reading about themselves, just as in Brisbane we love reading the great stories we've seen from here as well.
Exactly. And we're very on trend now. Like you say, there's a lot of books coming out, limited series, Deadlock, Bay of Fire is coming out. So we're very on trend at the moment. There's still so much to be taken from the state. And in fact, my third book that I'm working on at the moment is still set in Tasmania, less focused on a house, but we've picked another location that's a little bit spooky.
Ooh, I like it. Now, your story, I think, is every author has a great story, but for you to have had this wonderful success early with The House of Now and then now we're taking a look at Shadow at the Door, but your path and journey into this and getting those two books out there, pretty interesting as well. And I love, I'm chatting to Fiona McIntosh next week. She gets a little bit of a mention when you talk about getting things out there.
She does. For me, it's been a really long journey. So, typical story. I've always read prolifically. I've always written. I had my first taste when I was about 5 years old and decided I was going to be a writer. I enjoyed the fame that went with being capable of telling a story. But I got serious, and I say got serious with air quotes, about 2009. So meandered my way through a career path that was not particularly straight. And then in 2009, I was a single mum with two very young children. And I thought, you know, if not now, when? I've always wanted to do this. I've got to do it now. So I knuckled down. I did courses. I read books. I went to conferences. And I wrote. A few years later, after I'd moved to Tasmania, I did a Master of Arts in writing, which I've got to say was fabulous. But it basically was a really great procrastination tool to make me feel like I was on the path towards being a writer without actually writing a book. So that was great. But eventually, 2021, I'd done a Fiona, or was booked to do a Fiona McIntosh masterclass. And she had reviewed my synopsis and trashed it, pulled it apart in brutal, blunt language, which is what Fiona is known for. And it was very, very, very much appreciated. And after that, I put it back together. Pitched that book in a 3-minute Zoom pitch that I almost didn't take. And 2 weeks later, I had a 2-book contract. So
you just gave me a little bit of goosebumps there, because I can imagine, like, and I imagine for anyone watching or listening to us now who've been on this path that you've been on, that's like, yes, it happened.
I almost didn't take it. I pitched The House of Now and Then multiple times, including to Harlequin HarperCollins, who are now my publishers, and it had been rejected left, right, and centre. And I just had thought, I had the Zoom pitch booked, and I thought, why am I bothering? Why am I doing this? This book's not going to go anywhere. I guess I'll write another book. I'll do this again. As it turned out, it was the best thing I could have done. It was 2-3 weeks to the day from the day I did that pitch to going to acquisitions and getting a contract. So don't give up and take every opportunity.
So obviously the two books were there, and now you're on the road to a third. Are there just constant yarns rattling around in your head? And are you one of those, you see them and there they are and I'm tucking that away?
Oh, the bright, shiny things that glitter out there, the ideas. You know, so many writers say the ideas are not the hard part. Keeping those ideas in check, it's probably the hard part. I've been contracted for books 3 and 4, which is lovely. Book 3, I'm on a crazy deadline. I've got 20 days to get it finished. So I'm glued to my laptop at the moment. The ideas, though, come constantly, and I have to park them and put them in a little box, and every now and then add a little few notes to them, but you've got to focus on what you're writing at the time. I mean, you've got to finish a book. You can't print a book or publish a book or hand in a book that isn't finished. So no matter how glittery those ideas are, stay on track.
Absolutely. Now, I've seen a couple of people say, oh, it's a one sitting read. I just sat there. I couldn't put it down, which I'm sure is very flattering. But then a bit of you thinks, hang on a minute, that took me a while. Take your time.
What I like are the ones who say, oh, I couldn't do the housework. I was reading your book. And I think my job here is done.
Absolutely.
The housework can always go by the by. I'm not a big fan. It's a huge compliment. And I love hearing from readers who have devoured it and couldn't put it down. I enjoy books like that. I enjoy books that suck me in, that not only the plot keep you going, but the characters stick with you. And I've had people ask me, you know, what would you like someone to take away from your books? And my biggest thing is, you know, entertainment. They enjoyed it. It put them in. But for me, if a reader is still thinking about my book a week, 2 weeks later, for whatever reason, the characters or the twist or the unhappy ending, whatever it might be, that to me is the ultimate compliment. Devour it and keep thinking about it.
So, and I would say that's very true, because since I finished, I've been thinking about, I thought that might happen, but it didn't happen the way I thought it happened. I think what you've done really beautifully in this book is take us on a path that was completely unexpected. Sometimes you step into a book and you think, oh, I kind of know what this is going to be like. You went like this, whoop, 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 and it was great, because it was, and again, I know that we've had a little chat about this, but it makes it hard to talk about, because there any single word could spoil what this book is about, because you cover a lot of territory, don't you?
Yes. And like you say, we had a little chat beforehand, and our list of words we can't touch on is quite long because, people expect there to be twists in my books now. And look, I don't think the twists in this one are as huge as the one in that were present in the first book. But there is unexpected direction, as you say. And we can't really say too much because anything we say is going to give a hint of what direction those paths and journeys take. But yes, it's delightful to know that it was unexpected. I like that.
So let's give what we can give about it. Remy is a
Yes.
TV actress, or a former TV actress, now
Yep.
quite delightfully doing audible books and e-books. And she's living in this beautiful home, which is not unlike the one you've renovated, because her life has taken quite a turn over the previous years, hasn't it?
That's correct. So she's an ex-actress. She's quite reclusive. There's some trauma in her past, trauma and a rather unpleasant ex-husband who is trying to force her to sell her pride and joy because he part-funded it. He wants his money back, so he's trying to force her to sell. She's in financial strife, so she does something she does not want to do, and that is take in two tenants. And after that, things start to spiral. And
Very good description. I like it. So two tenants she takes in, really different characters. I love the dynamic that you set up because she has two women that come to live with her who are different in age, different in style and personality. You described them so well, and yet and you gave us reasons to love them, yet you made us wonder about them all the time. I felt constantly suspicious about everyone in this book.
oh, I love that. I love that. It's funny for me, situation comes first when I'm putting together a book, and then plot outline gets sketched in, and then the characters come to me. And for me, rounding out a character is very much a process that evolves as I do drafts, as I work on the book. And quite often the fullness of the characters isn't realized until quite late in the process. But I do love it when people enjoy the characters and either relate to them or want to see more of them. That's nice. But the fact that there's a cast of characters in this and you're never too sure who can be trusted, that's the objective achieved, I guess.
I did, and I did wonder if it's because I read too much crime, but I did. I was genuinely suspicious of everyone and thinking the worst of everyone, which is not the way I come at life, right? So
Yeah.
when you come at that in a book, it actually sets you up, doesn't it? It gives you that kind of it's what engrosses you in a book because you're always wondering.
And I think, as you say, prolific crime readers will always be jumping ahead. And it's the old, oh, it's going to be the least likely person who did it. So we know those tricks and those twists. And we, as you say, we because I'm a prolific crime reader as well, we suspect everybody because it could be anybody. And you're looking for little giveaways and clues. I think if I can get a crime, there are going to be crime readers who guess. There always will be. You're never going to outsmart everybody. But if they guess a part of what's going on and then get a surprise, I'm quite happy with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us about Remy, because she's a really interesting and quite a complex woman who, as you said, I'm not giving it away, had been through quite a bit of trauma to get to the point where she was quite reclusive and renovating a house and just getting by until she couldn't get by anymore. She'd been through a lot, and it was that real, I felt that real thing of which women do a lot to themselves around that kind of imposter syndrome and that I'm not quite it, I'm not quite there, yet she kept sort of pushing on.
She's determined, definitely. Her interpersonal skills have diminished over time. She was a trophy wife for a period of time there, which I think sapped even further her self-confidence or sense of worth. So that her sense of worth now is attached to this building, this project she's undertaken. And this is where I say it's her pride and joy, and this is why she can't leave it. She could sell the place, she could sell it, pay off her husband, go on to something new, but that she has achieved this outcome with this with a building that was derelict, rotting, had been occupied by squatters, to achieve it and bring it into its fullness is something that means so much to her, and that's why she can't let go. She can't move on. It's as you say, it's her self-worth, it's her confidence. So she's stuck there with her two tenants
It's,
and a refusal to leave.
And refusal to leave, yeah. It's a really modern story in a lot of ways, in that we deal with a lot of current issues around online, you know, be it censoring or how online can affect and impact in our real life as well. But there's some good old-fashioned stuff about ambition and money and greed. And so it's interesting, like, we talk about influences these days, but it still ties into some age-old problems, doesn't it?
It's that time of year. Our catalogue is out now for the mums and the other great women in your life. A book absolutely is the gift that keeps on giving. It gives that woman in your life, your mum, your grandma, your carer, time out. I reckon they've earned it. So take a look at the QBD Mother's Day catalogue out now.
It's interesting. So Remy is an audiobook narrator, as you said, which, yeah, I guess is a slight side piece here. The woman who narrated my audiobook said it was hilarious reading her job as she narrated the story, and she said,
right.
I got it right. So that was a little, you know, meta moment. That was quite funny. Anything that you do in the public sphere, even as something as simple as narrating a book, puts you open to criticism, critique, reviews, as we call them, and they can be weaponized. And so that is something that she encounters. And then there's her ex-husband's new wife is an influencer, and she's also not a particularly pleasant person. So there is that little delving into online weaponizing. And then the other small online bit is where how Remy finds her tenants. And this part of the story was actually inspired by a friend of mine who went from a high-powered corporate job to come to Tasmania to do a course. And she had to rent a place, and then she couldn't afford the rent on her own, so she had to get in tenants. And to see someone that was in their 40s going through the process of finding a tenant, which is much like a dating site. There is very little difference. You go to a website, you put up your profile, you read other people's profiles, you try and match, you exchange messages. And at the end of the day, you just got to go on your gut instinct. So you're bringing someone into your home who you've met briefly, who you can do no background check on. And there's a vulnerability there, I think.
Absolutely. And we make presumptions, don't we, about the people that we come across, you know, and why they're at this certain stage in their life and why they're choosing to move in with people that they don't know. And it does, again, it sets us up to be a little bit off kilter because we're wondering about them.
It's interesting. The fastest growing demographic going into rentals is actually women over 50, from what I've read. So it's a real thing.
Yeah.
And I think that some of those women that I've read of have had situations where they have moved in with people that they have to move out again because they have a sense of danger, insecurity. And I think that would be very hard to deal with. At the end of the day, we all want a home that we can come back to, that at the end of a working day and then we feel safe and secure in. If you don't have that, it's terribly unsettling. So I do hope that I delve into that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. You do about a third of the way into the book, you change tack a little bit, and that we start seeing and hearing different character point of view. So from the beginning, it's very much Remy and what's happened and where she's up to. And then suddenly we're hearing the flatmates.
Yes.
It's a deliberate ploy, but really interesting to bring in different perspectives.
I can't seem to help myself from writing multiple point of view. I've tried sticking to one. One character's voice only. Doesn't work for me. I've tried writing first person. One character voice for the whole book doesn't work for me. I like to get inside other people. So I think I'll always end up writing multiple points of view. In this case, when I was going through the editorial process, we came up with this new structure for the book, which was, you know, part one, part two, part three. And it's incredible how structuring the book differently, like chopping it into pieces, can alter the whole dynamic of the story. It just worked really well. In this case, it worked really well.
Interesting. So we talked about some of the women in the book, but there's a couple of key men in the book as well. You mentioned her ex-husband, Simon, who's not at all likable, but it really adds to it. And then of course a good friend Luke, who adds a really different dynamic when he steps in, because he's always sort of looked after her.
Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed writing Simon, and I he's so unpleasant, but it's also a little bit stupid. It was inspiration. I won't tell you where, who, or how. I like writing characters that people dislike, and not that necessarily that they're evil, but that they are just, you just want to see them get their comeuppance.
Yeah.
I find that when I read a book, there's all sorts of things that will hook you into a story. But if it's a story with a character that you want to see fall on their face, that's a compelling reason to keep reading. You want to see that character taken down. And I like to think that people have that response to Simon. And I think it has. I've had people reach out to me in comments and in emails who've only got as far as the first chapter, and they say, I do not like this man. He is horrid. He's just horrid. Perfect response. Love that.
You know, when you read someone like him and even his new wife, you think, how could someone say that, or how could someone be like that? But there are actually people in the world that are
yes.
like that.
You know? Yeah. And look, I surround myself by perfectly lovely people, and you know, I'd rather hang out with them. But, you know, we do come across people who, for whom cutting down others and being passively aggressive is just their way. They have no problem with it. They have no qualms with undermining others and pulling them down. And I'd like to put that in.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I think is an interesting choice and pathway is obviously there's a crime path in here and a thriller, you know, it's all of those things, but it's not a police thing, you know, we don't. And so I love the way you carefully step through how these people tried to deal with things themselves. And then you really have to cut like right on the edge, don't you, to make sure you're not overstepping what would be realistic in the boundaries.
I think that's very true. If I say I never intended to write crime, it sounds a bit odd. I wasn't too sure what I was writing when I started out getting serious about writing. I certainly didn't want to do a police procedural because I don't know a thing about policing. And I'm not heavy on research other than, you know, walking the streets and seeing what I see. So the lazy part of me said, I don't want to go down that path. You know, that would involve me learning something new. But I do like twists and suspense and mystery and secrets. So that was straightforward enough. As far as I'm going, I tried to keep the reactions to what was going realistic. You know, most people probably wouldn't call out for police help for something that doesn't appear too serious, or that could be explained away. Most people wouldn't put a series of events together and think, oh, someone's out to get me. It's just things going wrong. So there's that. I like to think that slow progression towards a sense of impending doom, if you like, but slow steps. It's not a body on the doorstep. It's little things that just take apart a life.
I think as well, that the other way, that the thing, other reason why you think, well, those little things building up, is because when you're on your own and you don't have natural companions or people that you can trust around you or family, it's easy to not bounce those ideas or opinions off someone. So when you've got Remy on her own and these things are happening, I can sort of understand why she didn't pursue it.
And I didn't think it, I thought if that was me, if I was in that situation, I wouldn't reach out to the police because no one would take me seriously. There's always that, again, that you know, not wanting to cause a problem, not wanting to step up with the problem, you know, a situation that wasn't real. You know, you don't want to cry wolf. So I think a lot of people would, unless it was blatantly obvious something had gone wrong, wouldn't call in reinforcements, so to speak.
Well, I think we have tiptoed through the tulips very well without actually giving too much away. Hopefully giving people a great insight into a really great thrilling read that will keep you guessing all the way. Tell me what you're working on now, or is that a top secret?
So the new book is tentatively called An Act of Truth in Fiction. It's about four friends who gather for a bit of a reunion, the old friends, and secrets are outed, and one of them disappears, What can I say without giving too much away?
That's all I need to say. I don't want to get you into trouble with any of your publishers. For now, congratulations on book number two, and I know people are going to be getting in touch with you with their thoughts and interests, but it's a great read, and congratulations, and look forward to everyone enjoying it.
Thank you, Victoria. It's been an absolute pleasure having a chat to you. I feel very, very special.
Thanks for your company on QBD Book Club, the podcast. Back soon with more author insights.